Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
We've launched into our summer reading segments. Today, we wanted to have a guide through books that are accessible but still make you think, which kind of describes Steve Almond, author most recently of the book Bad Stories, advice giver on the Dear Sugars podcast. He also teaches at the Nieman Fellowship at Harvard University. Our go-to guy on things literary. Steve, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm just going to quote an old editor of mine who looked at me one day and said, "You know, I like you, Steve. You're depthy, but you're also glitzy." So that was, she was from the South. That was my attempt at a Southern accent.
Well, there you go. Accessible, but still makes you think. What do you look for? I mean, there's that. Accessible, but makes you think. What else do you look for in a summer read?
So when I was choosing these books, I really wanted to choose books that I could sort of feel respectable about in the morning, but that were also truly thrilling reads.
Yeah, fun. And could be tent at night with a flashlight. So let's start your list, which, by the way, is very female heavy.
Yeah, that's kind of by design. I mean, the first book I want to talk about is this story collection, Florida, that just came out by the writer Lauren Groff, one of my favorite writers on earth. And she sort of said something out loud that I think a lot of people, myself included, have been thinking for a long time. She was asked to do this column in the New York Times Book Review, sort of talking about books. And they asked this pro forma question, if you could have dinner with any three writers. And I just want to read you her answer because it was so spot on. She answered, "I would invite every woman writer I have mentioned here, plus hundreds of others I did not have space to name. I would serve unlimited quantities of excellent wine, and we would get blitzed, and the conversation may eventually meander to touch on that most baffling of questions when male writers list books they love or have been influenced by, as in this very column, week after week. Why does it almost always seem as though they have only read one or two women in their lives?" Ouch.
Ouch.
And kind of an appropriate ouch, because I think, you know, I was talking with my wife, who's also a writer, and somebody was inspecting in grad school just a few years ago her bookshelf, a man, and he looked at her bookshelf and sort of scoffed at the idea that she had so many female writers. It's not a very well-kept secret that there's a real strain of misogyny in the way that we regard great literature.
Right.
Robin, if you think about a writer generically, what pops into your mind is probably a man. The irony of that is that more women are writing, and I would say writing deeper and more important work than men right now, and more women are reading it.
Well, don't you think it's because we moved through the sort of Hemingway-esque Norman Mailer kind of, in order to write, you have to be gruff and get into fights and drink. And I've hopefully moved through that, I think. Okay.
Yeah.
So where were we? Florida. the book from Lauren Groff.
We took the long way around to Florida, but it's relevant because this collection, Florida, really features almost entirely female protagonists, all of whom are really living on the edge in some way. They're on the edge of a nervous breakdown. They're on the edge of their sort of maternal patience. And sometimes they're living on the margins of society even. And she has this ability to immerse us in the consciousness of her characters and do what great writers do, which is to make you see the world in a new way. I want to read some of her prose because that's the only way to convey it.
Okay.
This is from the story, The Midnight Zone. It's a mom with her two kids. They're sort of out in the middle of the wilderness, and she gets a concussion and is sort of struggling to stay awake. And just the description of the natural world here blew me away. She writes, "One thing I liked was how the screens at night pulsed with the tender bellies of lizards. And a little bit later, the moon rose in the skylight and backed itself across the black." I've seen a lot of moons. I've never seen that, although maybe I've seen it every time and I've never had the language for it. A little bit later, she writes about trying to sort of pack her sons full of calories to get them to calm down. "I doubled down on the calories, adding pancakes to breakfast, and succeeded in making the boys lie in pensive digestion out in the hammock for a little while before they ricocheted off the trees." What's important to note here is that Lauren Groff chooses unbelievable verbs.
Those ricochets.
Ricochets, the moon backs across. It's just the unexpected, that place you're always trying to get to in prose, which is the intersection of astonishment and inevitability, that feeling of course, and oh my God, I've never seen it that way.
Okay. Lauren Groff tops your list with Florida. Let's go on to Zadie Smith, her essay collection, Feel Free.
Yeah, so people know Zadie Smith as a novelist. She wrote White Teeth, which is a huge bestseller, and a whole bunch of other brilliant novels. And she's also a fantastic essayist in the tradition of like Nora Ephron and Joan Didion, and somebody who's an observer of the world, both kind of the inner life and the world around us. This collection is kind of virtuosic. She takes on everything. She takes on books and movies and celebrities and even Facebook. She has an essay called Generation Y in which she sort of is writing ostensibly about the movie The Social Network, but she's really writing about our lives on the drug of Facebook. Here's what she has to say. When a human being becomes a set of data on a website like Facebook, he or she is reduced. Everything shrinks, individual character, friendships, language, sensibility. In a way, it's a transcendent experience. We lose our bodies, our messy feelings, our desires, our fears. And then she writes a little bit later, it feels important to remind ourselves at this point that Facebook, our new beloved interface with reality, was designed by a Harvard sophomore with a Harvard sophomore's preoccupations. Yeah. What is your relationship status? Choose one. There can only be one answer. People need to know. Do you have a life? Prove it. Post pictures. Do you like the right sorts of things? Make a list. Things to like will include movies, music, books, and television, but not architecture, ideas, or plants.
Oh, it's good.
So, I mean, you know.
Take that, Mark Zuckerberg.
Well, it's sort of take that, all of us, in a sense. She's trying to interrogate what it is we're up to in creating these digitally curated lives and the way in which it removes us from what makes us the most human, right? Our messy fears, our desires, our bodies, and humiliations and ecstasies. So it's just has the same quality as Lauren Groff in that she's taking on familiar terrain and making it new to us somehow.
Yeah. Okay, last pick. Speaking of taking familiar terrain and making it new, Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451, the 1953 dystopian novel about a future America in which books are outlawed and firemen burn them.
Well, I know that people are going to accuse me of using Ray Bradbury as a token white male for this segment. I'm guilty as charged. He is our token white male. But here's the thing about Bradbury. You know, back in 1953, he writes this book in which he envisions, and this is what I love about great science fiction, is that it predicts the future with such eerie precision. In 53, fewer than half of all American homes had a television. And he looks into the future and sees a future in which our citizens spend their lives in the thrall of huge flat screen TVs, and they wear earbuds called seashells in their ears so that they can sort of tune out the real world. And, you know, you sort of wake up in 2018 and go, good call, Ray Bradbury. Here's the thing is that I think people misunderstand this novel. They think it's a novel about sort of the tyranny of the state and book banning and burning books. And in fact, it's just the opposite. The great tragedy of the book is that people gave up on books willingly. They turned away from them. The writing all along the way is sort of strange and unexpected. And people sometimes hear science fiction and think it's going to be sort of cheesy or cliche. Not at all. His language is remarkable. And what he's after is the idea that Americans in 1953 didn't take things seriously. They were unable to really engage with the moral crises in their own personal lives and in their civic life.
Kind of a post-war, suburbs are springing up, Levittown was built, everybody, we survived the war, let's just put on New Year's Eve party hats.
That's exactly it. Let's kind of put on blinders. And so Guy Montag, who's the hero of the book, he's one of these firemen who goes and starts fires when they find books, comes home and he reveals to his wife that he has a book of poetry, and his wife and her friends are totally scandalized, and he keeps trying to ask them about their lives. There's a war that's going to start. He wants to ask them about that. And they really shrink in horror from that kind of discourse. And he says to them, we need not to be let alone. We need to be really bothered once in a while. How long is it since you were really bothered by something important, something real? And a little bit later on, a character says this, a mentor of Guy Montag's. And it made me think of the way that Zadie Smith is writing about Facebook. Whirl a man's mind around so fast under the pumping hands of publishers, exploiters, broadcasters, that the centrifuge flings off all unnecessary time-wasting thought. If you're not driving 100 miles an hour at a clip where you can't think of anything else but the danger, then you're playing some game or sitting in some room where you can't argue with the four-wall televisor. Why? The televisor is real. It is immediate. It has dimension. It tells you what to think and blasts it in. It must be right. It seems so right. It rushes you on so quickly to its own conclusions that your mind doesn't have time to protest. What nonsense. Now, I'm a book nerd, you know that, but that does feel a little bit what it's like these days to stick your head in the news cycle. As everything's coming at you so fast, you don't have time to step back and reflect on things. As you know, this is part of the reason why I wanted to write about, you know, Fahrenheit 451 and bad stories, which is kind of arguing we need to step back and slow down and be able to, you know, contemplate our circumstances and the morality of the decisions that are being made in our republic. Fahrenheit 451 is a thrilling book, but it's also a cri de coeur that's about the necessity of standing back and taking stock of where we're at and what it means.
Okay. Oh, what a great list. And we're going to have it here on now.org. Steve, we're going to have a lightning round. Just a list of books. We're not going to go into depth here, but just take his word for it, people, that you would put on our summer list. Go.
The True Believers by Rebecca Mackay.
We are reading that. For the program. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Great novel. The Lost Family by Jenna Blum. A beautiful, sad, wrenching novel. This book of nonfiction, Asperger's Children, The Origins of Autism in Nazi Vienna by Edith Schaeffer. Absolutely terrifying and fascinating book. I wanted to include a graphic novel since my kids are now reading graphic novels and loving them. There's a great new one called Young Francis by the writer Hartley Lynn that's just come out. And a kind of a fun romance called The Kiss Quotient by Helen Huang. That's kind of the perfect summer fling book. It's a romance. It's not so heavy.
Okay. Have a fling with a book. And by the way, we add In the Distance, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. We spoke to the author last week. We'll link you to it at herenow.org. Steve Aumann, author himself of Bad Stories. His podcast is Dear Sugars. He teaches at the Nieman Fellowship at Harvard University. Steve, thanks as always.
Stay depthy and stay glitzy, Robin Young.
That's right. His lists and your suggestions, welcome at herenow.org.